The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yabba-joy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I am coming to you virtually distanced from the MFC studios for this week's show. And on this week's show, we're going to have three separate interviews by our co-host, L-Man Jenny Feldy. She'll be interviewing author Paul Pape, author David Seth Cohen, and she'll be interviewing author and musician Craig Siafi. Before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the non-news.
It's morphin' time!
The non-news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi for your Wi-Fi, as well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, of which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comic bookness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way November of this year. Also, want to give a shout-out for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday Famous Renzo Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Huracan, and Millie Portez. If you want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. There's a little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also, on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source or find its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 is on sale, and Issue 2 is available right now, but only in person. The online function will be up shortly for your enjoyment. With that, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more It Came From The Radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Calling all comic fans, Huracan, Long Island's only benefit comic art convention, returns in 2026. Join us May 9th and December 12th at Bethany Congregational Church, East Rockaway, New York. Grab toys and collectibles, dig through comic books, meet artists and writers, enter amazing raffles, enjoy food, fellowship, and rock your cosplay. Just a $5 donation gets you in from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit Huracan on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's Huracan LI for details. Huracan, where heroes unite for good.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
CradleCon returns to the Cradle of Aviation Museum May 16th and 17th. This year features a G.I. Joe reunion with Larry Hama, plus the Crow creator James O'Barr, comics, cosplay, retro gaming, and more, all supporting the museum's education programs. Tickets are at cradleofaviation.org.
Now, back to our show.
You're listening to A Kid From The Radio. This is Jennifer Lee Spellman. I'm a very interesting guy. I was just listening to his TED Talk. He's a creator. He's a coach. He's a consultant. He inserts magic into your work. He can create almost anything you want, but he does design a lot of very interesting things. You can check out his TED Talk. You know what? I'm not going to tell you who he is because I don't like when people tell me who I am. So, Pape, welcome to A Kid From The Radio. Could you let us know, who are you? What do you do? It's very interesting.
Well, thank you for having me on here. Yeah, so I am Paul Pape. I'm a designer, fabricator, and customs collectible maker. That's my day job, so that's what earned me the moniker of Santa for Nerds. And if you're watching my TEDx, that's what that is called, Santa for Nerds. I'm also a coach and consultant who teaches other creatives how to be successful in business, which is something I'm very passionate about, being an artist and a creative, understanding how to actually be successful at it and get rid of the starving artist trope. That's what I'm all for.
Let's get into some of the things that you've created. So you have been called Santa for Nerds, and I have a gigantic 12-foot high stand outside, and I have a Merry Christmas banner outside my house year-round, and I have light-up candy canes because I call myself Santa, but I'm Santa with a clause, C-L-A-W-Z. I'm a little bit, you know, but we're not going to go there because this is not, it has to be radio friendly, and Santa Claus is not radio friendly. Yours is TEDx friendly. Mine is not at all. I'm actually going to get my vows renewed on February 13th, ideally. And okay. I would like a wedding ring box. And I saw that you created this magical wedding ring box. So could you tell us, our listeners, describe it in words, what you created?
I'm a huge nerd. I'm Santa for Nerds. I know so many people who have met via nerdy endeavors. They really like Harry Potter together. They really like Star Wars, or they're into this book or video game or whatever. What I do is I bring that information together and I create a custom ring box for them that celebrates their nerddom, all the things that make them nerdy and that they love about each other. And I create a proposal ring box from it.
And then they can see in that box, I saw one of them, that they can see the person they're going to spend the rest of their life with when they open the
so
box.
You're talking about the Mirror of Erised, which is a Harry Potter themed one, which shows you your deepest desires. It's from the book, and it's a mirror that you can see yourself in, but then when you press a button, it magically lights up and shows you an image of your future, which is typically an image of the guy and the girl together, or the guy and the guy, girl and the girl, doesn't matter, but it shows your future with those people in it, and then you open up the mirror, and inside of it is the ring as well.
So Santa for Nerds, well, you do coaching, I do makeup artistry and special effects and film production, all this stuff, so everything is creative. Stand-up comedians, a lot of times they're starving artists. I think out of every demographic I work with, from like tennis to workouts to dentistry to real estate, stand-up comedians are the biggest group of people that's hit me up with starving artist text messages. What would you tell a comedian who's a starving artist, truly? How do you help someone like this?
The first thing that I need to know about this person is, what is their passion? What are they truly good at? I mean, if you're a comedian, obviously you're talking about something that resonates with you. That's the information that you're bringing. Nobody's just reading knock-knock jokes from a book. And so what I need to know is, I need to know, what is that thing that is, some of them do, like some of them actually read But what is the passion that you're really there for? That's the thing I need to dig into first. And once I know that, then what we do is we capitalize on it. I mean, there are aspects of everybody, because everybody's journey is a little bit unique into how they got to where they're at and why they present themselves in the way that they do. So for somebody like a stand-up comedian, I'd say, what is that thing that really makes you stand out? What's the thing that you give to everyone else that no other comedian's doing? Because obviously you're bringing a unique show to the game here. And so once I know that, then we start to capitalize on it. So if they're a starving artist, a couple things that I do is, let's either get you on a show so that we can promote you better, get your name out there, because we really want to promote the person behind the work. Books are a great way to do it. I know a lot of people don't make good money at books, but comedians can, because funny sells really, really well.
Right.
Other than that, I mean, merchandise. We can sell merch for days, but we need that angle, because if it's just a funny person on a shirt, nobody cares. But if there's an angle on it, if you got a catchphrase, something like that, that's really what's marketable. What I really love with things like that is, if we can find a catchphrase that we can actually tie into an actual object, even easier. And then it's just that thing that either you're throwing out to your guests at your shows, or they're bringing to you, and so they're buying it and then bringing it back to you for just for notoriety, those types of things. That's the easiest way to do it. It's really truly being honest about who you are and who you want people to visualize when they think about you. That's what you should be selling. It's not about necessarily, I'm a joke teller, I'm a comedian. It's what makes you stand out from all the other comedians that are out there.
One thing I think about a lot, probably like once a month or something, when it comes to promoting a movie or a song, anything, even comedy, there's a book called The Art of Seduction, and you don't even have to read it. You can understand what that is. I think, and I do know at least one comedian that has studied hypnosis, because you have to hypnotize or seduce your crowd, whether you're selling this microphone, you know, on TV, or you're selling your OnlyFans, or you're selling whatever, you're selling yourself, you want to get married, you have to seduce or hypnotize your audience, unless they're desperate, and then they'll take anything, then you don't have to seduce them. But if they're people that have a million things to watch, why are they watching you? So one thing I've butt heads with is some people just don't seem to understand what the public thinks is interesting. They seem to discuss them and push them away rather than seduce them and draw them in. Is there any advice you have for someone who perpetually repels people and bores them and disgusts them rather than seduces them?
Well, I think a big thing is you got to know who your audience is, because everybody's got their group out there. And as much as I'd like to think that we all have millions of fans, the true reality is we probably got a few hundred to a couple thousand fans. They're the ones who are going to show up repeatedly. They're going to be the ones who buy your merchandise, that kind of stuff. And what you need to do is you really need to start selling yourself to those people, because you're obviously connecting with them. And the way that you know that you're connecting is because everything that you say, it resonates with them. They go, oh, that's totally me, or whatever it is. What we lose a lot when we're trying to appeal to the masses is that we're kind of muddying the waters. Everything turns gray. We're not staying true to who we are. I mean, I love the yellow that you're wearing right now, because it really makes you stand out. Here I am wearing all dark colors, but you're really popping. If that was your signature, I'd expect to see that every single time I saw you. And it's the same thing with these people who are pushing people away. It's like your comedy resonates with somebody, or that personality resonates with somebody. You got to find out who those people are. And if you're like, they aren't out there, I've got this great example that I love to give people. I was doom scrolling one night, really bored, and I saw this dog show that was going on. It was a video taken from like the doorway in a giant gymnasium, packed with people who were screaming and applauding and all that. And you could see a guy standing there, and he's having this dog do tricks. They're rolling over, sitting pretty, all this kind of cool stuff. And then the camera starts to get closer, and you realize that's not a dog. That's a person in a gimp suit.
Oh, wow.
I'm not here to kink shame. What I'm saying is, if that group can fill a gymnasium of people who are applauding, who paid to be there, you can find your people who are interested in the things that you're putting out there. You just got to work a little bit harder. And that's the great thing about the internet, is everything is very connected. And so it's not hard to find those people. And then once you start to resonate with them, you start to just build that momentum. And what's cool about that is if you find those like 100 super fans, they'll talk you up. They are the best form of advertising that you can get out there, because they're going to talk you up to their friends, and they're going to bring people like, oh, you got to check this person out, whatever. That's what's really going to help to sell you, because you're being true to who you are, and it's resonating with the people that are truly out there to look for you.
True. Just quick aside, this gimp suit, was he being walked on a leash?
Yeah, walked on a leash, and then, they're having him flipping around and doing all sorts of things, yeah.
That's funny, because that's actually going to be on a shot list for what we're going to shoot here. We're going to turn my house into a brothel, and the gimp suit thing, but I definitely want some guy to be walked around this house on a leash for the movie Deep. Shout out to Glenn McBride. All right, so back to you. So now we're going to get into the therapy section of the show. By the way, this is my grandma's sweater. It makes me feel close to her. I never wear yellow. And that's where marketing also leads to betrayal and confusion, because the person I am in most of my videos is pretty much not who you're going to find in real life. I might even be the opposite. Because this is a persona, and who I present myself to the public is completely different than who you're going to see at 3 a.m. in my house. That's a little problems I've had with this marketing thing. But anyway, psychology. You have this self-belief. I've watched your videos on YouTube, and part of your coaching and part of your message is to make people believe that they too can create something from nothing. And you have 3 children. I'm sure you instill that in your children, it seems like. I haven't been remote viewing your household, so I really don't know what goes on. Maybe you squash all their dreams from day one, and you're highly abusive. God forbid. I mean, God forbid. I don't think that's the case, but I don't like to comment on things I don't see. How did you get this self-belief in yourself that you could do things? Because you need to know that you can do something first, I think, before you actually go and create something. You have to know that it might be possible. So where did this self-belief come from? Did your parents instill this in you? What happened?
No, quite the opposite, actually. I was beat down the entire time. Like, you can't be this. You can't do this. And I'm a belligerent person as far as, like, my beliefs in myself. Like, I believe in myself probably more than anybody else ever will. It's mostly because I'm just trying to follow this random path that I'm kind of walking on. People say, you know, that I've got this path that I walk. Me, it looks more like a bowl of spaghetti. I have no idea where the hell I'm going. I really believe it. The people I interact with, the places that I go, the jobs that I do, they are all for a purpose, and that purpose is for me. That's, you know, that there's that adage, you know, you should have a job in which you never feel like you're working a day in your life. You love it that much.
Yeah.
It's true. I do love my job. I mean, there are days I hate working, but I love what I do. So that belief has just been something that's been with me since I was little, because I was kept being told, you can't be this. You can't be this. And, and to me, I'm more like, watch me. It's a self-reflection. No one's going to have the journey that I had. No one's going to have the journey that you had. That's what makes you unique, and that's what makes you special. And we are now in a place in history in which opportunity is literally presenting itself daily, with the ability to get on your phone, your device, and just say who you are. There are people who are taking advantage of this who I would say are not on the up and up, and they're trying to be manipulative. But there are other people out there who are just genuinely trying to do the best that they can and try to inspire other people for it. And that's really all I'm trying to do. I just want to keep having fun in my life. Got to pay bills, so I want to keep doing the things that I'm doing that allow me to do that thing. And when I talk to other people, it's not so much that you have to be born with this belief that you're great. It's just that you have to know yourself well enough so that when somebody comes to knock you down, you can stand right back up again and be like, thanks, but no thanks.
It's very interesting that you said you were beaten down. Did you have anyone? Was there a teacher or friends? Was there one or two or 10 people that were like, you're amazing, while you were beaten down at home? Was there any sunlight? Or was it all internal?
Like, I had these weird moments in my life. I'll go to, like, seventh grade. We had to do this project where we had to write to celebrities, and we had to ask them what their favorite book was. And I wrote to Jim Davis, this is the guy who created Garfield, the cartoon, and then I wrote to Ray Bradbury, who's a very prolific sci-fi writer, and I asked them both. For some fluke reason, I got responses from both of them. It's little things like that where, like, the universe keeps saying, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing it right. And it's not necessarily the people. Like, I wanted to be a designer, and so then I started designing some sets for a theater is where I started, and then I'm like, oh, I'll enter it into a contest. I won the contest. I'm like, okay, cool. I won another one where I literally, the Prince of Monaco hosted a party in my honor at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City. The owner of Fabergé came out and presented me with a, you know, one of 10 Fabergé eggs, be like, you're a really cool designer. It's stuff like that are just these things where the universe is like, keep doing what you're doing, bud. It's definitely not necessarily people. Now, I got a lot of people who are like, yeah, what you do is kind of cool, you know, or you're nice. Or my kids are like, you're an awesome dad. My oldest son, when he was 15 years old on Father's Day the night before, he actually wrote like 15 Post-it notes and posted them all over my studio. And they're just little affirmations of like, you know, thanks, Dad, for turning me into the person I am. You're very cool. I still have them all over here because I didn't want to take them down, because it's a really nice thing. Because one, it tells me that I did a good job as a dad. Yeah. Two, it's like people are seeing the work that I'm putting into it. And it is work. You know, I'm trying to live the best life that I can, being the most helpful that I can. And I mean, the universe kind of repays it, which is really nice.
Yeah. Wow. That's super cool. Yeah. No, I grew up with a dad who, he had a landscaping business, a dental business, 13 dental specialties, the house. He doesn't know what's going on in pop culture or, you know, foreign affairs, a lot of stuff he doesn't know. I saw that he can create houses and staircases and decks and teeth, and it showed me, oh, you know what, hey, like, I have some of this genetics, at least 50% or at least, you know, 49% or whatever, maybe I can do these things too. And it's really cool that you do that for your kids. And this is, you know, I have many more questions, but we're at the end of the interview, so if you could give our viewers, listeners, you fly by really fast. I would actually want to delve into every question a lot more, but the short format, maybe another day. So give us your final thoughts and where we can find you.
The only thing I'd love to tell to your audience is, life is an adventure. Don't be an NPC, which is a non-playable character. Be the hero of your own adventure. Go out there and enjoy the quest. That's what I would say. You can find me at places like gamifybusiness.com, which is where I teach creatives how to be successful in a game format. We make life into a game as a role-playing game. Or you can find me at Santa for Nerds over at paulpapedesigns.com. I also have a book that just came out. It's on Amazon. It's called Quit Selling Your
Butt.
I'm sorry, that's not radio friendly, but it is. But what it is, it is quit selling, like, creative people first product selling first is going to kill your creative business. You've got to sell the person behind it. And that's really what this is about. It's about becoming the person who you are, because you're more important than anything you make and try and sell. So try and be the person. So quit selling your stuff and, you know, sell yourself instead.
I love that. I love the be the hero of your own story. I have so much going on this week, and what I do usually involves creating something that's not there. I mean, it's very seldom I'm just working in an office or doing routine things. It's like a movie. I have to create a character. I have to create how she poses and moves and get to a new location and figure it out. And a lot of it, for me, causes stress. I don't want to, you know, miss cold times, whatever. But I love that. It's a great reminder to be the hero of your own story, because who can save you but yourself, really, at the end of the day? I mean, maybe your kids. Maybe your kids will come in and they'll save you if, you know, if you ever need help. When if you have a stomach ache, maybe they'll bring you Imodium or something. I don't know.
I think they'll revenge my passing, but I don't think they'll be there right
now. No. I'd love to see what your kids create with your genetics. That'd be really cool. So stay tuned for 20 years from now. We're going to follow up with Paul Tate's children to see what they created with all the knowledge and wisdom he's instilled in them. And on that note, we're at the end of the interview. Thank you very much. Check out this guy. He creates so many cool things that visually are obviously not seen in this interview. So check it out. If you like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if you like TED Talks, if you like creating things that are just wildly imaginative, check this guy out, Paul Tate. Over and out. Back to Mark Torres in the studio for more It Came From the Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From the Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Now, back to our show.
You're listening to It Came From the Radio. This is Dr. Feldy, Jennifer Lee Spellman. I'm here with a very talented guy, David Seth Cohen. He's a producer, director, editor, writer, magical creator. He creates things from really serious content, which is how we met. I actually acted for him in a commercial playing my least favorite role, a mom. I don't like playing a serious mom at all. It's so boring. I don't want to say the wrong thing and then I get scared. But we also did headshots together, and he has something really cool that he did a long time ago called Finding Sandler, where we're going to talk about. Here he is, David Seth Cohen. What's going on?
Hey, Jen. Thanks for having me.
So I'm glad we met. I guess I applied to be an actress in a commercial. I don't even know. Yeah,
you auditioned.
I applied for it. I auditioned. Oh, yes. I sent an audition.
Yes.
And it was a commercial for an autism company. My stepbrother is autistic, so I actually wrote a script about my stepbrother. It was helped out by his mother, who's the mother of an autistic son who lives in my childhood bedroom. Yes, that's how we met.
And you were really good. The client actually chose you out of a whole bunch of people that we had auditioned. You were great. And it was a lot of fun to work with you. If I remember correctly, when we had some downtime you know, we were setting up, you had told me that you were in production as well, that you do hair and makeup and special effects makeup and all sorts of stuff. And I was like, oh, maybe we could connect on some other projects and I could bring you on. And you're like, yeah, that'd be awesome. And so fast forward, we started collaborating.
Right. See, my most recent memory is like when I think of you, I'll think of, you know, you're Finding Sandler is cool. We'll get to that. And the ferry, we did a lot of productions with the Long Island ferry and also the Long Island, the
Adventureland.
Adventureland.
And the lighthouse, the Huntington Lighthouse.
Yes. All these things where I'm not a morning person and I got myself somehow together in a stupor and tried not to sweat and try not to have BO while we're running around ferries and on boats and getting splashed on and climbing up lighthouses with no bathrooms and producing very professional commercial and narrative content. So tell us a little bit about this. I forgot about this.
Oh, well, that was for Discover Long Island.
Yeah, that was cool.
It's a part of a YouTube series that they have going on called You Belong. I ended up getting that gig because of Finding Sandler, the documentary. My film played at the Long Beach International Film Festival in Long Beach. Because I was a born and raised Long Islander, had ties to the festival through just being in the Long Beach area for so many years and showing up at the festival. And their PR person called me and asked me to be part of their media day. I show up early. You know how I am. I show up early.
Yes. Oh, my God.
So I showed up early and there was someone there that told me she was from Discover Long Island. And we just got to talking and she's like, oh, you know, what are you here for? And I explained my film and, you know, what I do, corporate videos and stuff like that. And she's like, oh, the next time we have some stuff, I'll reach out. And usually you get people that say that and then it never happens. Like they never reach out. But a year later, they reached out. And that's how that whole thing came to play.
That was really cool. I learned a lot from that. I had a great experience. It was fun. It wasn't too difficult. And well, not for me, for you. You had a lot of work to do. These are kind of intense. They're very high level production videos. Like for anyone listening, this guy, David Seth Cohen, does very quality work. If you want something to look like top-notch, you know, I used to teach work classes for Equinox and New York sports clubs and different tiers. Equinox is like almost at your top. I would say David Seth Cohen commercial production is like your Equinox level. So if you want that, you hire this guy. You want something that's a little more janky and crazy, you hire me by myself without him. You're going to get you something that's wild. You know, even my video's a little blurry right now because I don't care. I care about the content and making jokes and saying random stuff.
Hey,
you know, but
it works. Yeah. For me, it's a matter of the quality of the video itself as well as the content. And that was one thing that I really liked about those videos that we collaborated on was not only did they look awesome, but what was said and the way we kind of portrayed it in doc style was fantastic.
Right.
And everybody that sees those videos gives me high compliments on them. I've never had like somebody say, oh, those videos suck. Everyone's like, oh, those are really high-end videos. And they've helped bring in other business. So it's a great thing. Yeah.
I mean, you made one of my childhood dreams come true. So I'm so glad that I did this commercial for you and stretched myself to play a mom. What a difficult role for me. It's the worst. You know, this is like asking someone else to fall down the stairs. Falling down the stairs, I did my own stunts, is easy. Playing a mom is difficult. We shot at Adventureland. So
that was
side
cool.
note, don't eat two bagels at like 1 a.m. and then try to shoot at 6 a.m. because I was dead asleep and in so much pain. But man, we were at Adventureland at 6:30 a.m. before the whole park opened. Adventureland.
And
you
didn't know
this.
You didn't know this stuff, Jen. But like, they were giving us about an hour and a half max for setup and interviews. The two people in that room because we had to be out of there before they opened because that's when the flood would come in of people.
Well, that I knew.
It was like time pressure, but you know, we pulled it off and everybody was happy. So that was great. Yeah.
When we worked together, I always wish your dream come true. Oh yeah, it was definitely one of my dreams. It was so cool. And one of the things we did was, you know, everyone gets into the park. They basically open the floodgates and all these kids started running in and their smiles, you know, they didn't have to act at all. They were just so excited to be there, just like I was, because I used to go maybe even once a week as a kid. The haunted house is still there and these kids were so excited and we got to open the doors and capture that. That was so cool.
And you made the video, by the way, Jen.
Oh yeah, a minute, I forgot. You know, your commercial production is great. We know that. Now, you also have Finding Sandler, which is really up my alley because the whole reason I got into anything video production, believe it or not, was teaching workout classes, which I fell into by accident, and comedy. My parents are the funniest people I still know to the day. You know, everything they do, even dentistry, my dad's telling jokes, you know, with his hands in people's mouths. You know, he has an audience all day. Yeah, and my mom's one of my favorite people to write comedy with. It's all about comedy. So you have something called Finding Sandler. I've watched the trailer, I'd say at least 6 times since we got acquainted. So just tell us, what the heck is Finding Sandler?
In 1998, when I graduated college, I worked on the movie Big Daddy. And the night of the premiere for The Waterboy, Adam Sandler wanted to wear clothing from the set. And I happen to work for the costume designer, which is pretty funny because I'm colorblind. So she asked me to deliver these clothes to Sandler's apartment. There was a woman named Autumn who was another PA in my department. I had to drive her home. And then I had to bring the car back to the office and just go home for the night. So I went to Sandler's building. It was in the middle of Manhattan. And I double parked and I told Autumn I'll be right back because I was instructed just to give the clothes to the doorman and then be on my way. I go into the building. I give the doorman the clothes and he gives them back to me. And he goes, just bring them up to Adam. So I go up to his floor. He's on like the 40 something floor of the building, super high building. I get to the floor. I walk down the hall. I knock on the door. And from behind the door, I hear, who is it? What do you want? He started yelling at me like he yells in his movies. And I was like, oh, it's Dave. I'm just a PA here to deliver your clothes for the premiere. And he opened his door and he had this big smile on his face. And he goes, hey, man, you want to come in and hang out and have a drink? And I froze. Thoughts going through my head. It was like an angel devil kind of thing. Like the angel's like, you got Autumn in the car. You can't stay. And the devil's like, dude, stay. He's like your hero. You got to stay and hang out. And I ended up following the angel path and told him, look, I can't. I got Autumn in the car. I got to get going. And I gave him the clothes and I left. And I never had the chance to hang out with again. Fast forward to 2006. I turned 30. I'm living in my grandmother's basement apartment. I'm living with a girlfriend of mine at the time and my two dogs. And I'm a producer at a Catholic TV station and I'm Jewish.
Right.
Not really where I thought I'd be in my life at age 30.
Right.
And then I would have these nights where I would toss and turn in bed thinking like, what if I stayed and hung out with Adam Sandler? Would he have given me some advice? Would something he said potentially have changed my trajectory?
Right.
And I had a dream one night. In my dream, I went to California looking for him. I somehow found him in this dream and we started walking and talking. And then I abruptly woke up. And when I woke up, I was like, this has to be a sign, you know, whatever. And I had a small production company at the time while I was at the TV station, called my business partner. And I told him, I'm like, hey, Dan, I had this dream and I want to try and find Adam Sandler and have the drink I passed up in 1998. And he goes, hey, 6 a.m. Can we talk about this later? And I went in, like, I went into the TV station. I told a couple people, like, hey, I had this dream. I want to make this movie called Finding Sandler. And a bunch of people offered to help me. And then we just started making it. And that was it. That's how it happened.
You still haven't had that drink with Sandler, right? I mean, I know that, but no, right?
I have not had the drink with Adam Sandler yet. No.
Any plans? Like, it's 2026 now.
I know, it's 20 years later. And I have not released the film yet either. I've been kind of holding off to, like, say, maybe he'll come around or maybe somebody that I know that knows him will facilitate this thing. I've actually made the decision in my mind that if it doesn't happen this year, I'm releasing the film. And that'll be the question is where and how and all that. But yes. This year, 2026.
Let's say, you know, I could play God, or let's say someone could make things happen. What's your ideal outcome? Do you want to just release the movie, or you want to meet him this year? Like, what are we doing?
Have the drink, then release the film.
All right, everybody listening, put David Seth Cohen in touch with Adam Sandler and have this drink. And it doesn't have to be alcohol. It could be kombucha.
It could be water.
Green juice. Be water.
I'm all about water. I barely drink any alcohol anyway, so I'm all for water. Truth be told, if he'd rather have a joint or something, I'm in for that too. Whatever it is, I'm in.
My man, that's what I'm talking about. My man, you know I love the greens. This is a green day over here. All right, so now you have a future project, which we'll see if I'm a good enough actress to make the cut. You know, I might be starring in this. We'll find out tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up in the future, the things you're working on.
Well, what you're talking about is a potential short film that I'm going to do for fun. I haven't done like a narrative film project in a while, and I've been having this itch, and I met this writer and he wrote this script and I really like it. And we're just trying to finalize, you know, how it ends at this point. I'm going to share that with you either later today or tomorrow at the latest, that short film. And then I've got a couple other projects that are in development, animated action comedy series for adults called Code of the Samurai. Think like Deadpool meets a samurai kind of deal. So it's a really great project. I didn't write it. It was written by my partner on the project. I think it's got a lot of potential. So I'm looking to get that off the ground this year.
Yes.
And then I'm also in talks to potentially do a biopic about a famous golfer. I don't want to say who it is yet. I'm working on getting the life rights together. And once I have that, I can talk a little more about that. And then I'm also collaborating on another, like a romantic comedy script with somebody. I have a couple other projects that are kind of on the shelf right now that I'm looking to start pushing again. So this year is going to be a little more of a push for the film and television project than I've done over the last few years, which have mainly focused on, you know, corporate videos, commercials, event video and photography, and also corporate photography. So
I'm glad to hear that, because I'm obsessed with comedy. I think you have a great eye for it, and you understand and appreciate that quirky comedic way of being. But you also, like me, I can be very serious and I can come off even uptight. And some people have even said to me they didn't even know I had a sense of humor, because I can, you know, dull that out and be just like a freaking computer. And that's how you kind of have to be when you're doing commercial work. It can be a little soul sucking, but I know
we have fun on our sets, though.
We have fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, the craziness that goes on in a comedy
on a
or horror.
Set, a lot different.
I mean, I'm throwing stuff across the room. I'm breaking stuff. It's wild.
Right.
You know, it gets really crazy and dirty and inappropriate for the radio. And you can't really do that on a commercial set for a client. You don't do that. And I will say David is also very observant, because before we started, I was hoping he would
the double
say
glasses.
Yeah, he notices little nuanced things right away, and he's like, "You got double glasses." I was like, "Ah, oh, you called it out before we even hit record." Yeah. I
and what's in your hand? Is that like a bracelet of sorts? What is that?
Oh yes, I don't know. Someone gave me this bracelet, and I don't know, whatever. It has nothing to do with anything. But you also do you have anything about like tennis? Can we talk about?
Oh yeah, anything? Yeah. So the ball boy, the tennis comedy. Yeah. Did you read that script yet? I sent it to you a while
ago. Few pages, and I recommend you an actor that I thought would be great, but I don't want to leak too much stuff, but from what I read, I was like, dude, this guy knows comedy. He's got to make this. I loved what I read, and I got to finish reading it.
We had raised $2.5 million for that script back in 2019, right before the pandemic. The problem was that we had 6 months to match the money, and we weren't able to match it in the 6 months time that the investor gave us, and we weren't allowed to use any of the money to lock anything in either. It had to sit in the account until we matched the money. So it was kind of like, it was great to have the funds in the account, but without being able to use them, we weren't really able to take it to the next level, and it got a little tough. And I was going through a little life change at that point. I had gotten out of a long relationship and sold my house and moved into Manhattan. Oh, wow. So it was a different world for me back then than it is today. Wow. And so we'll see. Yeah, I'd love to get that project back off the ground if
please.
It's a really funny tennis comedy, The Ball Boy.
You said it's a little like Caddyshack. Is that okay? Did I say that?
Yeah, it was called by a company that read it, National Lampoon. They called it like a Caddyshack of tennis kind of thing when they originally read it. It is it's that kind of comedy.
I love it.
Thank you. It's a fun.
Yeah,
and
everything. Of everything to me, I play tennis since I was 6. My dad plays like 3 to 5 hours of tennis, you know, every day on the weekends. He's tennis obsessed. I used to be tennis obsessed. Caddyshack obsessed. I even used to see my life in terms of Caddyshack. I worked at a rehab center and I had a boss. I was like Lacey and Chevy Chase and the Rebellious. Like, this boss was always pissed off at me, and he's like, "Wear khakis." And I even did physical therapy with a guy who acted like the judge. So they're these uptight people, you know. So yeah.
Maybe Dr. Feldy wants to help finance it.
Yo, I will do whatever I can. If I believe in a project, I get a little fanatical about it, which I think is a
it's a fun project.
Creating.
It would be a lot of fun to shoot that. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of like ridiculousness in there.
I love it. And there's like some, you know, sexiness, you know, the guy's like, you know, attractive, and you have sports, and you have playfulness and jokes, and sometimes things can just be ugly and gross and funny, but I feel like you could also get some type of beauty and sexiness in there with the characters.
There
which
is.
I like.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of everything in it. It's got heart, it's got comedy, slapsticky and not slapsticky, and it's a fun project. Maybe too many jokes about D-I-C-K, but we'll see.
We'll see. I'll read the rest of
the main
script
character's name is Randy Balzac, so.
That's great. Well, on that note, we are over time, as usual. Sorry, Mark Torres. I've probably like 5 minutes over time here. Just give us your final thought real quick and tell us where we can find you, website, social media.
My website's davidsethcohen.com. If anybody has any projects, corporate work, or films, they need a director, producer, editor, whatever, they can reach out. There's a contact form on my site. My Instagram's David Seth Cohen. My Facebook's David Seth Cohen. My Twitter's David Seth Cohen 1, although I don't go on it much. I think TikTok is also as real David Seth Cohen.
We're done with the interview. So now back to the studio with more It Came From the Radio.
Now back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From the Radio. I'm with Gregory Chaffee. He's a professional actor, poet, novelist, director, professor, and I worked with him recently. I was a makeup artist, but we're for first right away. We're going to go right into it, right into the meat. He did a short film, produced the short film and directed.
I did indeed.
And wrote it?
I co-wrote the screenplay, absolutely.
And what's it called? It's called Beyond the Silent Night. It's a 9/11 tribute. So tell us about that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And also, quick shout out, fantastic makeup artist here. The work we just did together, I'm very excited about. Beyond the Silent Night is a tribute to the remembrance of 9/11. It's a short film that just entered the festival circuit. So the idea is later this year, in time for the 25th anniversary, we'll have a film about that topic ready to go. It came about because I teach at night at Nassau Community College, and I have an adult student who was really an FBI agent, and he wrote this short story, and I read it, and I said, this is brilliant. If you ever wanted to make it into a film, let's do it. And eventually he's like, now is the time, because the anniversary is coming up. So we made this film, and it's really interesting. It's a short film, but it's about a FBI agent on the verge of retirement, and he has to journey through a bewitched New York City to give something to someone, but we don't know what it is or who it is. So it has like some Christmas Carol vibes, and it takes place on Christmas Eve.
I'm working on a lot of Christmas-themed movies right now, actually, with Glenn. McBride Jr. is one of your actors. We have Pull Out, Christmas-themed, Deep, which we're going to shoot the rest of Deep here because shooting at motels sucks.
Yes.
So I said, no, we're just shooting here. I'm done. We're not going to another hotel, so we're set designing this. So I'll be with Glenn.
Yeah, so Christmas seems to be the motif of your life.
So, okay, so a little bit more about this 9/11 tribute. Now, the guy was an FBI agent. Does he have any real stories from being an FBI agent in this film?
So when 9/11 happened 25 years ago, he was a new FBI agent, and that was actually like one of his first cases.
Mm-hmm.
And his short story actually takes place on the Christmas Eve after 9/11.
Okay.
But now that that's kind of 25 years is considered a period piece, we can't really create New York City on an independent budget like that looks like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Like the cars and the buildings are different and everything.
Yeah.
And so we decided to update the film and actually make it take place right now instead. So it's kind of full circle for Robert Duffy, who's the original writer, because now the film is about an agent at the very end of his career instead of the very beginning of a career.
Very interesting. All right, so it's totally switching gears now. So rap music's kind of like poetry.
Sure.
I got a lot of raps, like a freestyle. So what makes a bunch of writing a poem rather than like a short story or a haiku or a diss track?
There is no formal definition of poetry. Poetry certainly does not have to rhyme. It does not have to follow a very specific aesthetic. You know, the old adage is like, if it kind of looks like a poem, it's probably a poem. But now we have something called prose poetry, which looks like a short story and almost reads like a short story, and people have all different feelings about it. The point is that anything can technically be a poem. We all have our preferences of what poems are. If you put it to music, right, is it still a poem or is it now music? Is music the same as poetry?
Right.
Something can be poetic and not be poetry. And so, yeah, everyone has their own definition. But I will say, you like this, a lot of modern poetry, I go to the city a lot for poetry, and a lot of it is definitely inspired by sort of 90s hip hop. Yeah, absolutely.
So do you perform your poetry at open mics?
Yeah, all the time. Here on Long Island, there are some great ones. I actually run one. It's called Beats by the Beach.
Okay.
It takes place every third Friday. Follow us on Instagram. And I run it along with Paula Kersey and Peter Dugan, who are both former poet laureates, so they're like the real deal. And you go up on the mic, and it's an open mic, so anyone can come and perform a poem or two.
The poem is more of like a rap?
What's also cool is I actually have made these poetry films. It's called Poetry in Motion, and the second one's about to come out in April. And basically what we did, we took 12 poets and poems, and we shot poetry videos in the style of old school music videos. But it's not music, it's poetry. And so it's more performative. It hits a little harder than what some people might expect from poetry. And so it's really interesting. Poetry in Motion, we threw up all of last year's on YouTube. So if you just search it, you can get all 12 videos. And we're going to premiere the next one in April at the Oceanside Library for Poetry Month. So it's going to be dope.
You know, it, for me, I don't know what it is. Maybe I was supposed to be born as a man. Actually, psychic told me that I was a black pimp in my last life. Anything that feels a little bit girly or not like super masculine, I just, aside from makeup, I'm into some girly things, like makeup's pretty girly. Poetry, I always felt like, that's for girls, or like yoga, people like, oh, you're yoga, you do yoga. I'm like, nah, that's for girls. What would you say to a man who's like, nah, man, that poetry is not masculine? Like, is it masculine? Can we make poetry masculine?
Once you go to a few open mics and you realize what it can be, you're like, oh, this is not what my preconceived notion thought it was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in a high school or something in school, you think, oh, poetry's like love stuff, flowers and butterflies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get on the scene and it could be about anything. It could be quite hard hitting. It could be about politics or history or you know, the world or rock music or like a poem can literally be about anything. And people really think outside the box. There's also just funny, hilarious poetry.
Okay.
And you can go there and just laugh hysterically at these poems, and it's not not what you tend to think of, but palm can be anything. And to be honest, in many open mics, there is just as much men, if not more men, than women on the mic.
Your book. Now you have another one. Was it Summer in Heat or something?
Yeah, so Summer Heat, Poems of Passion.
Very erotic.
They are passion poems, however you want to sort of characterize them, which isn't necessarily my forte, but I had enough where I put together a collection.
Inspired.
Let us say various lovers helped compile the book
inspirationally,
which I am ever grateful for in all the ways.
Oh, it's great to have loved. And now your current book, which just came out.
Poetic Anarchy is my first full volume collection of poetry. Everything I've ever written is in there. All the poems from all the chapbooks are in there. Mm-hmm. So it's everything. It's also why I call it anarchy, because there's no rhyme or reason or theme. It's everything mashed together. It feels like the closing of one chapter, like anything I write after it, it's a brand new start for me as a poet. Beautiful artwork by a local Huntington artist, Diego Garcia. It's a great piece. If you like poetry, you're interested in it, and you're not sure what poetry can be, this has everything in there. From the love poems to the hard-hitting poems to maybe a poem that you're like, you know, this could be like a rock song or a hip-hop song. Right. Yeah.
Maybe you'll make a music video about some of them.
I actually am planning a project where we are putting some music to my poetry.
Okay, music to
poetry. Yeah, that hasn't been quite announced yet, but you can be on the lookout for it.
Yeah, I think that's where, I mean, you know, books are still around. People are still reading books. I heard there's making a comeback.
Love that.
And, you know, but there's audiobooks are very popular and video. Like, we're in the, I think, the age of video, right? Take any of your work and make a video. That's probably a good idea.
Yes, like short, you know, hard-hitting vertical videos, you know, like the influence of social media and you have to play the game anyway. However you can best get out your work,
right?
Do all the things.
So now you have to work with a bunch of different actors, which have all different types of personalities.
Sure.
And we worked at the film. I just did makeup, did I? Yeah, I just did makeup, little effects makeup for a film called A Mother's Voice. You directed, you did not write it, but you definitely directed and produced it with your partner, Emily DeNova.
So Emily,
fantastic.
Yeah, she's great. Emily and I are creative partners. We run G&E Productions.
Yes.
It launched in 2018, and we try to make a film per year. A Mother's Voice is very different for us. It's a legal courtroom drama. I've never done that. We've never done that. It was my first time directing something that I starred in.
Oh,
so that was also wildly different, and I'm not sure something I want to do again. I kind of like one or the other. I've directed things that I've had smaller roles or supporting roles, but it is tough when it's an independent film and, you know, your crew is limited in scope, and all of a sudden when you can't be the director or can't see what's on the monitor because you're in it, you know, you have to rely on other people. Luckily, I mean, we had great artists. Matt Simpkins is phenomenal, director of photography, and Emily was the assistant director, but she was also in it. There were scenes we were both in. So it was a wild ride, but that's a great one. That's another story of a former adult student of mine who is a lawyer wrote that for my class. So I did watch it evolve with my input, but he is the true sole writer of it, John Ardito.
Yeah.
And I happily directed that one as well, and also got a great role as a sort of a ambitious young lawyer trying to go up against the system.
It's all about, I guess, infant deaths, like infants.
Yeah, it was inspired by the Grieving Families Act, which is not a law that is passed here in New York State. But it kind of questions the idea of how much grief and suffering do we award, you know, the parents who have lost a loved one. Yes. What is the value of a life? Yes.
That success would say it's so inappropriate. How much is your dead child worth?
Not verbatim, but that is basically a line in the film that someone who's posing the idea of the bill says, played by Glenn, actually. That's his role.
Opposing it? He's kind of like the bad guy?
He's not the bad guy, but he kind of needs to play both sides of it for political purposes, because that is his function, his job in the film. That's his role. So he kind of gets to play both. We're really excited about it. It came out really well. It's still in the editing room right now. We had some ambitious takes. We had a whole courtroom scene that was a one take, no cuts. And so we did the whole thing. It's like almost 3 pages long, which for a short film, you know, it's intense, and you don't see that very often in legal dramas, right? Normally, like, it's locked off because it's very intense, but, like, we wanted to pick up the whirlwind of what it's like to actually be in a courtroom, because John took me to a real courtroom to prepare for the film, and I watched a medical malpractice case, and the one thing that I did not realize is how intense and intimidating it is in real life. Like, I was just sitting there watching, and I'm like, oh, like, this is a performance. So that's, and it started clicking both as a as an actor playing a lawyer and as the director of how I wanted everything to feel and look. So it's there's some exciting shots in there.
Yeah, lawyers got to be really sharp. They got to think of everything that can happen, and they got to think ahead. And I'm so flattered that two people, 2 years ago, it was 1 year, asked me if I was a lawyer or attorney. Like, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So I feel similar when we were filming, right after we were done or on break, on lunch break, a few of the crew members asked me if I was a lawyer in real life. And I joked. Jokingly told them the truth that I literally had no idea what any of these words meant when I first got the script. Like, I had to learn what all of these terms and this legalese
That's what I was gonna ask.
Even meant. Like, and luckily I had, you know, John, who wrote the thing, who is a lawyer, and he like really meticulously went down the line with me what everything means.
It's harder to learn those lines than a regular script.
It's like a different language.
Exactly.
It's literally like a different language.
And he was telling me, he asked me to even rehearse with him, and it's like, Glenn, you got to find someone who's less busy than me to rehearse. Only packed schedule, so find some freaking loser. I'm too busy. But anyway, no. Well, yeah, actually, yeah. Find someone who has free time. And they don't have to be a loser to have free time. You can be a very great person to have free time. So no shade to people have free time. So I was very busy that weekend. I'm sorry, Glenn, that I didn't help you rehearse. When you have these legal terms, it's a different language.
Yeah.
It's tougher for any actor.
Yes.
How skilled you are, right?
Yes, it was definitely a challenge. But that note from those crew members really made me feel warm and fuzzy inside about the performance.
And you know what? Just to let you know, even though I am a makeup artist, I work in production, I've actually did this at a law commercial. I'm not going to say the law group. And I said, I want to just use a teleprompter. I have teleprompter apps on my phones. I have a teleprompter app. I saved the freaking day because this lawyer would have taken like 3 hours.
Can't do that.
For a lawyer to say all these terms on camera, it's difficult. For an actor who doesn't know the legal terms, this is legal terms on camera are kind of difficult.
It's absolutely. And the formative aspect on top of it, whether you're a lawyer or not, when you have that language and you have to perform in some way, like the commercial, it's doubly challenging.
I was trying to make everyone feel better.
Everyone
was having a little bit different difficult time, so it's definitely a challenge.
I do feel like that's a skill of yours.
Try to make people feel Well, it definitely makes some people nervous. I've been told that, or they're a little scared. I've been asked, someone standing right there, if I am a vampire and if I eat people, and then he said if anyone was going to eat people, it would be you.
Yeah.
I
see the scared thing too, but also simultaneously a calming vampire, if you will.
I never killed anyone.
Yeah.
I did steal a lip gloss from CVS once when I was much younger.
Nice.
But yeah, sometimes, you know, I like to kind of play God. And I like to, if I have the power to make something easier and better and calmer, I will.
Sure.
But if I think you're horrible, I think I'll just leave you alone and I'll let you just suffer, you know.
Sure.
This is where I'm at now. I can't come in to save everybody.
Sure.
Anyway, back to you. So now I have to talk about Emily DeNova before we close out. Emily was phenomenal. She just really stood out. You know, I've been lucky to work with a lot of great people this year, and she definitely stood out. She was like so organized. She kept people on time.
Yep.
You know, she had to yell at people. She wasn't afraid to yell at people.
Oh, she actually loves yelling at people. It's her favorite thing. Yeah.
As makeup artist, like, tell me 30 seconds for, you know, give me a countdown, you know.
Yeah.
And she also is into martial arts and I used to teach workout classes. So for me, I look at filming as an athletic event or an act of going to war. So you might have seen me coming in and it might have been like, this girl's going to war. She's carrying all the stuff. She's wearing fitness clothes because you have to be ready for anything, to run across a field or have different wardrobe options because we might be outside in the cold.
Sure.
Or we might be somewhere hot.
Yeah.
So what are the great things about working with Emily? Because she's just so on top.
Yeah, she's the
and
best.
She's fit and she's smart. And yeah. Like, try that.
Yeah, and if you are running 30 seconds behind, she will just karate chop you from the martial arts. So okay. She, you know, she really has it all. I mean, the fact that she was able to just pop in as that character, she is the mother's voice, right? She plays the mother in the film who loses her child. That's the first scene in the movie, so that's not a spoiler. She is phenomenal. And then to just pop out and switch out and start directing. But this is what we do. When we created Genie Productions, we said we are Renaissance artists.
Yeah.
We do it all. We write, we act, we direct, we produce the whole kit and caboodle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a wonderful journey. We met, both got cast in Tony and Tina's wedding. And then we played Tony and Tina for, like, I don't know, almost a decade or something. Yeah. I mean, we still do it separately. She'll go on tour and, like, I'll go on tour.
So
things like that.
This married couple kind of chemistry.
Sure.
You know, you're not married, but you know, you can have the difficult conversations on set to get it done, which is what you need to do if you're on a film set. You need to be able to be direct with someone and meet with someone.
Sure.
And you guys have all that together. So you're a great, you know, duo.
Thank you.
It was just really cool to see you guys work together.
Yes, absolutely. It's always a blast, and we always try to work together.
Yeah, I totally get that. I'd want her on every set. And someone, I think it was Tara Westwood, saw her, and she was like, Tara West was one of the actresses that was in your film. She was phenomenal also, and she liked the way I did her hair. So I said, listen, I'm a makeup before hair, so I don't know how good this is. She's like, it's great. But anyway, you know, plug. She saw Emily working. She said, I need you on every set. Like, wow, this is great. So anyway, enough on Emily. We are actually at the very end of the interview. So you have about 2 minutes to give us your thought of the day, anything that's weighing heavily or lightly or anything you think we should know, and then also where to find you, your websites, your socials, anything coming up.
Firstly, I would just say be on the lookout for our upcoming works, Beyond the Silent Night. Hopefully it'll get into a bunch of New York spaces. So just keep an eye out for that one. And A Mother's Voice will also be on the verge of a premiere later this year.
Nice.
If you're into poetry, like we discussed, again, check us out at Beats by the Beach every third Friday in Long Beach, New York. It's an open mic. It's a lot of fun. Kind of, I always encourage people to expand, you know, their comfort zones and what they think is art. And I think art is, honestly, is the thing that keeps me going. It keeps me most fulfilled in life. And so if you have a creative outlet, whether you're a professional artist or not, I think it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. One question.
Yeah.
You can answer in 30 seconds or a minute. Work-life balance. Do you think it's important? Do you want to have it? What do you think? I mean, having a work-life balance can get in the way of being successful because you're putting your time into things that don't have to do with your work.
Sure.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Final thoughts.
It's a tough one, but essentially, I feel like my work is my life.
Yeah.
Everything I do is not just like a job that I go home. It is part of a lifestyle, whether it is being a professor at Long Island University, like whether it is being a writer or an actor or director, it encompasses my life. It envelopes my life. And that's kind of how I like it, how I want it. I think I have tunnel vision, and successful people, I feel like, often have tunnel vision is what I've observed. So when you want to go and do a thing, you have to put, I don't want to like half, you know, anything, you know, like I really want to go for it. So it is, but it's a wonderful life to have. It's a different life. It's a different lifestyle.
Many won't understand.
You can't do the quote unquote normal things, but you get to do other things. It's a beautiful life.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And on that note, where can we find you? Instagram, website?
Yes. Instagram, Genie Productions, Gregory Chaffee.
Mm-hmm.
We have a website, genieproductions.com. I'm on Facebook. Feel free. You know the deal.
All right. Thanks for being on It Came From the Radio. We're going to throw it back to Mark Torres in the studio for more.
Prithi Pata, if you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google "It Came from the Radio."
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to "It Came from the Radio" with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.